This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, Aftershockers, and this is episode number TBD of Aftershocks Podcast. I am your host, Travis Williams. We got a guest host this week, Mr. Aaron Bell, the famous Aaron Bell from Absolute DC and Podcast Without Bolts. How's it going, Aaron?
It's going all right. You know, I'm ready to talk some Aftershock. I haven't done this in a while.
Yeah, when was the last time you were on? It's like maybe a couple months ago?
To be honest, I was trying to remember. I don't think Ronnie and I actually talked any specific books. I think we just kind of talked like the broader Aftershock publishing list. So I can't even place it to when something came out. I know like Dark Ark and stuff like that were definitely going on because we talked about it. So, I mean, it's within the last 4 or 5 months, I'd say.
Awesome. Yeah. I went through all those episodes pretty recently, actually. So that was a good episode. You know, like, I'm glad to have you on because I feel like I've seen a bunch of tweets recently about, like, how much you are digging Aftershock.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. When it first started up, I had that old, you know, like the renewed Valiant feel that right off the bat, I was just kind of all in with everything. And, you know, I think out of the first wave of books, there were only maybe two that I wasn't so into. And, you know, from there, I mean, I just, anytime they'd add a book, I would add the book. And that's pretty much how it's been going since then. That I'd say out of everything, there's maybe, I mean, less than a handful of stuff that I haven't really read.
Yeah, I feel you, man. I've been all in as well. And, you know, given, you know, certain developments, you know, recently that are going on with Valiant, you know, like, I don't know, Aftershock's kind of like, hey, what's up? You know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, every time there's like a new book announced by Aftershock, even if the book itself doesn't look super appealing to me, one of the creators working on the book is someone that I like. And then it's like, you know what? I would check it out for the writer. I'd check it out for the artist. You know, I mean, at this point, anything that they put out, I'm going to give a chance to because they've very rarely led me wrong.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, I mean, given the way that they kind of structure their releases, you know, like by and large, like, you know, they're all minis or like a series of minis. So like they're self-contained and like pretty easy to just like take a chance on.
Right.
You know, like not something that's going to be going on for dozens of issues, like without a direction, you know, like for better or worse, like, you know, you get to just experience it, you know, pretty reasonably.
Yeah. I think on Twitter the other day, someone was talking about ongoings with Aftershock and how it's really just a lot, the same thing. I was just a lot of, you know, it's a lot of minis that, you know, maybe you'll get another volume, you know, when they have some more story for you. And I was thinking about it, like a book like Rough Riders, even though it's now, I guess, on its third mini, right? The third volume, it's still a continuing story. So it kind of feels like it's just one story. You know, it's not like, here's six issues of this contained story and, oh, people like this. Well, let's do something completely different and give them another six issues. Like everything seems to flow really well. It just happens to be, all right, we'll do six on and then we'll take a break and then we'll give you some more and, you know, see where it goes from there.
Yeah. I mean, I think the season analogy is apt, you know,
right.
like, each series has a different overarching plot, and you know, like they seem to be, I think, divided by, you know, some length of time, you know, like, so it's like, you know, like they build that into the narrative. So yeah, I mean, it definitely works for a book like Rough Riders, you know.
Yeah.
There are definitely other series as well that, you know, I wish would come back.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so like, yeah. But okay. So, I believe last night on Twitter, there was a little exchange. We're talking about, you know, people's top three Aftershock books.
Yeah.
So I thought that would be, you know, like an interesting exercise, you know, like Valiant podcast style, you know, it's like an abbreviated power rankings.
Okay. Now, do we want to talk like current favorite three or all-time favorite three? Because that kind of changes my list a little bit.
Wait, I forget what the context of the tweet was. Like, someone, like you were saying about
somebody was talking about baby teeth and yeah. how great it was. And I said, you know, I really like this book, but right now that they're putting out some other really great things that I think Baby Teeth may have slipped out of my current top three. So it's probably a more current thing.
Yeah, I mean, dude, shocking. Like, and I agree, it is very competitive up at the top.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It's nice to see, you know, like, I mean, I do the DC podcast, and there's, like, a handful of books that are consistently always great, and then there's a lot of stuff that sometimes have flashes of brilliance, but most of the time it's just kind of mediocre. And I think with Aftershock, there's a much higher level, like, top to bottom of the books. That, you know, everything really competes with everything else that, you know, week by week, my list might change.
For sure. Month to month. Yeah. It's like, it's kind of a jump ball, you know? Yeah. So yeah, kind of to that and also to the context of the discussion, like I say, like this month, you know, like last month slash this month, if okay. like, you know, like if it released in either, because obviously we're just starting the month out.
Yeah.
So you want me to go first, or are you,
yeah,
you,
sure,
wanna...
if you want to?
All right. Well, I'm going to go from top down because I feel like that's easier. So I'd say number one book I'm enjoying is Rough Riders.
Yeah.
You know, like that's. That's usually book of the week pretty consistently. And you know, I'm definitely digging where this new season's going. So number two, I think I would say Baby Teeth.
Okay.
And number three... maybe Monstro Mechanica?
Yeah. Yeah, I really dig that one a lot, too. I would say my top three, and like I said, it changes often. I really, really enjoy the whole universe of the Animosity books. That, you know, I mean, I guess both books together I would count as my favorite. Just because that whole, like, everything with it, you know, I mean, I sit all the time with my dogs, making voices for my dogs, having conversations with my wife. And I think to myself often, you know, I wonder if my dogs gained like, you know, the ability to talk to us, how quickly would they tell me that I'm an idiot? And, you know, I just enjoy the heck out of that book. Same thing with you. I really like Rough Riders. Each of the three series have been great, you know, and this one, I guess we're two issues into this new one. What is it? Ride or Die, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it hasn't done me wrong yet. And right now I haven't read, the issue that came out this week, but I absolutely loved the first issue of Betrothed. And I would probably put that right now slightly ahead of Baby Teeth for me. Like Baby Teeth, the last maybe two issues have been great, but it's not, for me, it's not like the same level as the first six or seven. You know, it's kind of, I mean, it's not slipping in a bad way, but there are other books that are inching up. And I mean, Monstro Mechanica is another one that's really great. You know, and Fujitsu would probably round out, I guess, my five or six favorites.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty close to that. I'm interested by the betrothed thing. Yeah, that's cool. I read the second issue last night, and I did like it.
Yeah, it's not what I was expecting, and I'm definitely interested in seeing where issue two goes. You know, I'll get to it probably, maybe tomorrow, I hope. So, you know, for me, I hope that it holds up, because it's always such a downer when, like, a first issue is so great, and then you get the next one, and it's, like, just a total drop-off from where the first one was. But I have faith in Aftershock that it won't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had a lot of questions after the first issue, but, you know, like, I was happy with, you know, the steps that they took forward in the second ones about, you know, like, specifics about the premise and, you know, like, so I think it's going in a good direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely excited to read more.
Dude, I feel like that could be, you know, like a pretty successful pitch to, like, the CW or something, you know, ABC Family now? Freeform? Like young adult channel. I think, like, they might eat something like that up.
Yeah, and it seems like it could be, I mean, if done well, it could be, you know, like, it could grab a teen drama plus an older, you know, I like weird sci-fi action drama crowd too. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I watch all the comic TV shows, so I would keep, as long as more stuff comes out, I would probably keep watching them. So, yeah.
Word. All right, so should we, you want to jump on the books?
Sure.
Sure. Okay, so first up, we're going to do Jimmy's Bastards number 7. Co-creator and writer, Garth Ennis, and artist and co-creator, Russ Braun. Colored by John Kalish, and lettered by Rob Steen. Okay, so on this one, this should be an interesting discussion, because I don't believe that Aaron is all caught up prior to this issue on Jimmy's Bastards.
Correct. I read this issue, but I have not read since issue one. So
yeah. Okay. Well, this is gonna be fascinating. You know, because like when you told me that, I was kind of trying to think about how specific they get about things that are within this issue about like exposition type stuff.
Right.
So basically, like the general like nutshell of the series up to this point is, you know, like Jimmy somehow, you know, like world famous secret agent for MI6. You know, like somebody's out to get him, and turns out that it's basically an army of his illegitimate children, his bastards. Okay. You know, by, you know, let's say conservatively like dozens or hundreds of women.
Right.
You know, and like spearheaded by this guy Jimmy Jr., who looks just like him, like identical, and they all do, in fact. And Jimmy Jr.'s devious plan, to get back at this dad that was never there, was to get all of his half sisters to like swing by Jimmy for the last decade or two, and you know, sleep with him. Unbeknownst to him, you know,
right?
Like, you know, maybe lots of times. So over the course of years or decades, and then they just tell Jimmy, they're like, "Yo, like, you know, like you've been like banging your daughters, you know, like hundreds of times, if not thousands," and that kind of serves to like push him over the edge.
So,
you know, like,
do the daughters know who he is?
No, the daughters are, yes, they're all working for Jimmy Jr.
Oh, okay. So that makes it way more creepy.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is, like, A, creepy, and B, kind of just, like, it's nonsensical. I don't think it's supposed to whatever makes sense. You know, like, I think they're taking a piss, as right. you know, some would say, you know? Like, they're just kind of, like, screwing around. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. It's definitely kind of a little... whatever, gross. But
ridiculously over the top.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess I don't know enough about Jimmy's character to understand. Like he certainly didn't know that this was happening at the time,
right?
Like, so he's not to blame for it per se. Like, and given that he. Like, seems like he'll, like, bang anything with the pulse. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it's interesting that he collapses in such a dramatic way.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, like, plan worked, clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, also, while this is happening, same group, they get this substance called the gender fluid. And they, like, basically it swaps the genders of everybody in Britain.
Okay.
You know, so like all the man bits and lady bits, they're swapped, and like basically it kind of devolves into like a nationwide orgy, like instantly. And I mean, actually, I think that's the most interesting part of the whole series, like kind of the ideas that you pose with like swapping the genders. Like, I guess Futurama did it, whatever, right. But I don't know. I think I'm very interested by that aspect, but I'm confused if it's really going to pay off or if it's just kind of a platform for jokes.
Well, as someone who has not read the previous six issues, it seemed to me in this issue that it was definitely, everything was more a platform for a joke than something that me as a new reader, that I was waiting for there to be some kind of a payoff.
Like, we'll see. You know, I don't know how many issues are left, at least in this kind of installment. Like basically, I think those two storylines, I don't know. If they don't somehow tie them together, like you know, I think it'll just be confusing.
Right.
You know, but there are things in this issue that I think maybe suggest that they might. Because they kind of like in passing, somebody's asking about the gender fluid and they make reference to like, you gotta ask the expert, like suggesting that maybe at some point somebody will go find, the person who made it and, right. and A, point to an antidote. And I don't know, like I assume there's going to be some significance to who that person is. But yeah. It's a pretty silly series anyway, so maybe looking for a payoff is like the wrong approach.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's going to be one of those things that whenever the series is going to end, that last issue is just going to be filled with tying up every single loose end in like ridiculous ways. Kind of like maybe the end of a Scooby-Doo episode. Where everything just kind of comes together and they figure it out and it's all just, now we've figured it all out and here's where we are.
I mean, like, I don't know, like you tell me, does it seem like kind of any of it is like trying to be deep, you know?
No, not at all.
So it just
went way, everything about it was way over the top. And like I said, because I haven't read it before, when I opened up the issue and there's like towards the beginning of the book, there's the guy talking to the girl about, can you explain bras to me? Like, I think I have the wrong size and it doesn't make sense. And then I'm just like, what exactly is going on with all of this? It's just ludicrous. But I guess that's what the point is.
That seems like a lot of what the point is. It just seems like that's an interesting pairing. All of that, like, it's all sex stuff, I guess. But like, it's just an interesting pairing of like different angles on sex stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Two different sex storylines.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely different.
Well, dude, oh my God. Like, you know the scene where he calls this guy Mr. Thump?
Right.
And he's like, oh, geez, Jimmy, like, I'm definitely going to help you, but, like, I'm doing, like, a titty wank or something. Oh, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's... I was confused. I mean, the way you explained it makes it make way more sense that pretty much everyone who has been affected by this is, like, all sex-crazed. Because I'm like, why? You know, what is going on? He's on the phone for 2 seconds. There's that old guy who's kind of rubbing up on his leg. And
that's Sean Connery.
Is that actually Sean Connery?
It's, like... Basically, he's in an asylum for
like
007 agents, and there's like analogs of all the different Bonds, you know.
That's kind of funny.
So that guy talks in a Connery accent.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like every bit of it, you know. And I guess Jimmy Jr. when I first see him, he's just like dancing and dousing himself in champagne, and you're just like, what exactly is happening anywhere?
It's yeah. Also, nuts. He's naked and has a boner.
Yeah.
So there's that. Yeah. Jimmy Jr. is a piece of work, dude. Like, I'm not sure. I really know what his deal is, but I don't really know that it's supposed to be taken seriously, you know? Like, so I think it's just supposed to be funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like you said, it really just kind of takes all the old spy movies and takes the most ludicrous aspects of it and just magnifies it by like 100 and throws it all in here.
You know, yeah,
like the crazy violence where Jimmy Jr. is trying to figure out who the girl that's there to kill him, you know, who is she standing close to, and then he basically like explodes their hearts trying to blow her up, and you know the crazy sex stuff and everything about this, it's like, you know, what people joke about James Bond movies, just like way up a level.
Yeah, well, I think the idea of the bastards is like a pretty interesting kind of exploration of the Bond trope, you know? Like if Bond really was just Bond his way across the world and, you know, like whatever, like sowing his wild oats. Yeah, like you got a bunch of Bonds out there. Yeah, and you know, like I think it's fair to say it's funny. You know, it's definitely filthy. Like even the language is kind of like, ooh, geez, you know, like, you know, saying the C word and like,
yeah,
like really, it's I think it's meant to be provocative.
Right. Yeah. No, I could see that.
Cool. All right. You got anything else you want to kind of go at this book? Or are you feeling good?
I don't think so. I mean, I'll put it this way. When it first came out, it wasn't really up my alley. But, I mean, reading this, it's way more amusing than I thought the first issue was. So, I mean, maybe I'll give another issue a shot when the next one comes out and see where it goes.
Right on. Okay, so are you familiar with Taco Tamos?
Oh, yeah.
All right, you want a Taco Tamo this one?
Oh man, let's see. I would probably. This is kind of exciting. I've never given an actual Tamo before. I would probably say that I would give this 3 out of 5 men with breasts Tamos.
Nice. And I'll go 3.75 out of 5 AIDS finger and nurse negative Tamos. That kind of like flew over my head the first time, but like on a second read, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think, you know, we may get a special guest here for the next couple books.
I have come from the future.
Hey, buddy.
What's up, gentlemen?
What's up, Martin?
Where is the Baron?
He's, I don't know, packing for some convention.
Shame on that guy.
Yeah.
It's okay. We forgive him. He's going to do the Lord's work over there.
No, he's not. He's going to get drunk and forget everything.
Yeah, what's but as long as he's recording, he'll be fine, right?
I guess.
If he remembers. Wait, who's recording this?
You are. Oh, you weren't recording the first 20 minutes?
Hell no.
No, I've got 3 things recording, so I'm not going to screw up like you.
You are so fancy, Aaron Bell.
I do what I can.
Man, Aaron Bell on the Aftershock Central podcast. What a treat.
Yeah.
I just want to jump off and listen.
No, you don't. Trust me. It's nonsense. We were talking Jimmy's Bastards.
Yes, that is nonsense. It's fun nonsense, though.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I was saying as well. You can't take it too serious.
So I'm assuming that Aaron hated it.
I didn't hate it. Why does everyone always assume I hate everything?
I didn't read it. I'm like 2 issues behind on that book.
This is the first one I've read since like partway through the first issue.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I didn't like the first one. And honestly, if Ronnie didn't send me the he's like, you want to do ACP? And here are the PDFs. I was like, well, I've read these 2 books, but thank you for that one. And I will read it now.
Ronnie's
Dude,
the best.
It's funny. Come on. It's a funny book.
No, it is funny.
Bad. It's not bad.
It's funny. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that I could see myself rushing to rushing out to read every issue.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could see, oh, you know what? There's 3 or 4 issues. Let me grab them and I'll just sit and, you know, 20 minutes, just blow through them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I know you guys aren't talking Cold War today, but you know that Hayden Sherman has a new book coming out.
Is that the girl from Heroes?
Hayden Sherman? No, dude. Come on now. That's the cheerleader.
Yeah.
Is that her name?
No, Hayden.
Hayden Christensen?
Penetier? Or something?
Yeah, sure. Why not? No, the artist from Cold War. He's got a Bolt comic coming out. Wasted Space.
Interesting.
Yep. Looks good. Well, actually, it is good. I read it. It's great.
I doubt it.
You doubt it?
You'll yep. see. You said Batman 44 is great, so now
Oh
I
my
doubt.
God, it's so good.
I doubt everything that you say about everything. So, all
right. Look, you know I'm not a fan of the run. That was a great issue.
Nah, I don't think so.
It was. Have you read it?
No. Dude, I stopped buying Batman like 12 issues.
Shame on you.
No.
I hate buy it every week.
Nope. I stopped. I was like, you know what? I am not even going to get Batman anymore. That's my little protest. And you can see I've skewed their numbers. So they've stopped. They stopped producing more issues.
Ah, yes. Yeah,
you it killed Batman.
Yep.
I just posted while in our Discord and on Twitter. I was recording with Paul tomorrow's episode of my show, and I got an email from Comixology that they refunded me $2.99. And I was like, what the hell?
Why is that? Do you know?
Well, I have no idea. But so, apparently they refunded me $2.99 for Batman 44, but it's still in my library, so obviously I paid for it.
Yeah.
Anyways, whatever. You know what I mean? I spend enough money over there. Thanks for the tax refund, Trump.
No, that's just a satisfaction guarantee refund. It's just like, here's your money back. We're sorry.
Oh my god! If that's the case, they should give me so much money back. I bought like 30 issues of that book.
Special offer, one issue. Yeah.
No, I was actually reading Haunt when you guys called. The Kirkman and, oh god, what's his name? Capullo book.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's interesting. It was kind of like a Spawn meets Outcast.
Interesting. So it starts off really good and then gets absolutely terrible?
Yeah, it starts off pretty good. I haven't gotten to the bad part yet. Okay. I'm still on issue two.
Yeah, because Outcast dropped off real fast for me.
So you see this, Travis? Every week, we're on the ball talking about Aftershock Comics, and here comes Aaron Bell, and he wants to talk about other stuff.
No.
Yeah, we were on point, dude. We were all Aftershock until you jumped on. Yeah.
Oh, it's my fault.
Yeah, and it's cool. I'm just going to cut this part out anyway.
Damn it. It's the best part.
Yeah, and also, I'm not recording your vocal track. So no matter what, it's just going to be me and Travis still asking questions and then silence.
Yes. Winning.
Karma, bitch.
Let's talk about some Aftershock books.
All right. So Animosity next?
Sure.
Sure.
All right, so Animosity 13, written by Marguerite Bennett, artist Raphael De La Torre, colorist Rob Schwaggy P. Schwagger, and lettered by Marshall Dillon. And I will nutshell if you guys want.
Go for it.
All right, so I'm a little confused on some points, so we'll definitely – you can correct me if I'm off base. Having killed the queen bee, the farmers try to convince the bees to return to slavery at the farm. The bees send melted wax down on top of the farmers, then overload the turbine, causing the dam to break. Sandor saves Jesse from the flood, but they get separated. Kyle finds and abducts her and begins traveling to the walled city with Sandor on her tail.
I would say that's pretty good.
Yeah, that seems like what happened.
Okay, well, I think the thing that confused me the most was whatever that piece was where there was all the melty stuff going off the dam.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you guys think that was, like, a work of the bees and or like their was that like the animals that were on top of the dam that were doing that?
I mean, who else would it be, right? I mean, no pun intended.
Oh.
I don't get it. No, I mean, because you you see when they show the big like the aerial view of the dam, it is just, you know, hundreds and thousands of bees floating around up there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it doesn't really look like there's anyone else there. So my guess was that it was them.
I mean, it makes sense. They killed Beyonce, you know? Like, they gotta get their payback.
<That's> so horrible. The show was so good up until about 2 minutes ago.
That's what I get for hanging out with Paul. Yeah. No, this is a really good issue, though. I think I called like the Jesse running off thing for a while, and I wonder if that's not the next phase of this book. And you mentioned in your recap that Sandor's on their tail, but I don't know if Sandor knows where they're going.
That's kind of how I took it at the end when they got separated in the water. You know, he's like, just go, I'll find you, you know, it'll be fine. But I don't know how, you know, if she was in the river and got out, I don't know how he would follow the scent.
Yeah.
To wherever they are.
Yep.
That I think he's just kind of, when he just kind of randomly washed ashore, right? Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like, he's all out of it. And I think he just sort of heads off in a direction, not necessarily where she is. Like he's trying to sniff for her. I think.
Yep.
So that howl is he's like
frustration,
like he can't find a sense.
I think that could be it. You know, because he's pretty much been her everything. You know, and they were separated a bit, and they just got back together, and now I think it's all the frustration and all the everything else setting in that he finally just lets loose with the howl, and all the animals are just like. Okay. And there it is.
Yeah. I mean, he's a bloodhound, so, you know, he'd be a good tracker, but between the dam breaking and the smell of, like, millions of gallons of wax and the fact that it's raining, there's no way he's got her scent. So I think, at least for the next arc, we're going to see Kyle and Jesse go off to the walled city, and then you're going to have Sandor and the rest of the animals on a separate journey. And then maybe at the end of the next arc, we'll see the two get back together, possibly. And maybe even like right before Sandor dies, right? Because we know he's sick and dying.
Do we know that?
Oh, yeah.
Why do you got to bring that up and make me all sad?
Well, I mean, this was a sad issue, dude.
Yeah, no, it definitely was.
It was a sad issue.
If you think about it, though, aren't most of the issues kind of sad issues of this book?
Yeah. There's a lot of depressing stuff in this book.
Yeah.
There's a lot of depressing stuff. But, you know, like, a lot of people make fun of me because I don't like those kind of stories. But, like, if you tell them correctly, I can thoroughly enjoy them. And I think the way that Marguerite does this book is really above and beyond what a lot of comic creators are able to do. In their stories, because she's always got like the little like life lessons in every issue, but like to me at least, they never feel preachy, you know, and they make total sense in the way that they're told as part of the story. Also,
dude, I mean, I think also, you know, the just kind of the sci-fi like premise and mechanics are like get super deep. Like pretty often, you know, like basically they use this, tool, like the animals becoming conscious. Basically, I think it's almost inarguably a commentary on, you know, race and, you know, slavery, you know, like those, that kind of stuff is the natural outgrowth of like the best of these series is about that. It's like, what if, you know, like you had to come to terms with like that you used something or you were taking advantage, you know, I think that, and they kind of reference that in this issue where they're like, you know, we knew, you know, it was inconvenient. We knew that like they were every bit like on our level, you know, right. And it was more convenient to not say anything.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about human nature in this, which was interesting. And it's depressing because people suck. But, you know, it's kind of true, too. Like the one panel where I can't remember who says it, but somebody says something to the effect of like every man will be a tyrant if given the choice. You know, a lot of people aren't willing to say those kind of things in their titles. But, you know, if you look at human history, that's really kind of the way it's always been, right? anybody that's given the opportunity to take over and rule eventually kind of becomes a tyrant. And unless you have some serious checks and balances, then it's very easy to fall into that situation.
Well, let me just add to that, though, that, like, if every man would be a tyrant if given the chance, every animal would be a tyrant if given the chance. You know?
What? Yeah.
But we see that in the Rise. I think you see that, you know, I mean, not only in what's the other one, The Rise?
Well, it's Evolution. No, Evolution,
yeah. Yeah. I think you see it not only in that, but in this one, too. I mean, they keep coming across different groups of whatever.
Yeah.
You know, either there's animals and people working together and there's still, you know, the crazy animals that are, you know, out to stop everybody else from, you know, from getting their piece of whatever,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, or it's all, I don't know. It's really, really well done. You know, I mean, I think that this is probably one of the books that really makes you think the most,
mm-hmm.
just about, you know, like you guys were saying about, you know, people interacting and, you know, just, I guess, you know, like the overall society, you know, how it functions with, you know, within itself.
Yeah. Yep. It's good.
Yeah, man. And not good. Only that, I think the art in this book is just always fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine trying to come up with how you're going to draw a page with 8,000 bees and make it, and make it look, you know, even though it's just kind of like yellow dots, it looks like a swarm of bees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't just look like, oh, I'm just going to sprinkle a bunch of dots around here. That when the bees are attacking the people, when they have the ether or whatever it was, it looks like bees are swarming and going after them. That it's so, so well done.
I want to see more horses in this book, man, because from my understanding from comic book artists, horses are the hardest animals to draw.
Really?
And there hasn't been a single horse in this book.
No, that can't be true.
Put some horses in here.
There hasn't been a horse? I don't remember.
I don't think so. Not that I've seen. More horses, Marguerite. Yeah, I agree. The book is this book is really special, man.
Yeah.
I don't know how well it sells, but you know, since they're continuing and they have two books going out at the same time, I'm assuming it does well. And I hope they continue to put it out, even if sales drop on this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to her at New York Comic Con this past year,
mm-hmm.
asking, you know, if she planned on intersecting the two stories at any time. And she said at mm-hmm. some point it will happen. But she's like, I have so much to tell that, you know, why rush it when you got
yeah.
You know, everything else that you want to put into it. And, you know, she said if something was to come up and the book, you know, dropped significantly, then she would do it quicker just to wrap up the story. But, I mean, I'm in for the long haul with this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I definitely, I'm with you completely that I hope it's doing fantastic because I want this one to keep coming out.
Agreed.
It's kind of like becoming a flagship. For Aftershock, I think,
yeah.
right?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it is really, at this point, I mean, it's almost the longest running book. Black Eyed Kids had, what, 15?
Sounds about right.
You know, so this one's up to 13, and then there's four or five in the other series, and there was the three-issue mini.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the, what is it, the World of Animosity book that came out. So, I mean, it's up over 20 if you count everything. So.
And a coloring book.
Well, you can't count the coloring book.
Just because it had no words.
No words mean nothing. Bloodshot didn't have... Oh, I guess Bloodshot had no art. It had a ton of words. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Let's rate this one up. 13 out of 5 for me. 13 you got any out of 5 tamos? Brazilian wax tamos.
Ugh, yikes. Okay. I'm gonna go 4.25 out of 5 Ether Rag Tamos.
Oh no, you stole my Tamo.
It happens.
Oh no. All right, well, I will give this a solid 5 out of 5 Howling Bloodhound Tamos.
Nice.
Yeah, you stole my ether hanky.
That's better. Partial credit. Dude, I mean, that's the nature of the Tamo, man. Sometimes they get stole.
I've listened to OTV long enough to know.
Yeah. And sometimes you forget to choose them or think about them. Yeah. It happens.
All right, Travis. Okay. Are you in charge of this podcast or is Aaron, since I missed the first part of it?
I'm hosting because Aaron's the guest. And
oh,
guest
okay, cool. Host.
So, right. Yeah. I'll continue to host.
Go for it.
For Rough Riders, Ride or Die, Issue 2. Written and co-created by Adam Glass, artist Patrick Olaf, colored by Gabe Eltabe.
Yep.
Okay.
My close bad. Enough. Better than Ronnie.
Dude, I feel like I should have prepared. Okay, lettered by Sal Cipriano. Okay. So nutshell, Monk Eastman and Annie and Edison escape from danger, and the team meets at the seance house. Lovecraft tells them that the mystery box suggests the involvement of Dutch legends called Bokenridger, or Buck Riders. They decide to question the Dutch housekeeper, but she hangs herself in front of them. And afterwards, they find a creepy shrine full of pictures and articles about Roosevelt. I think everything right now is like pointing to Roosevelt, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what they want you to think.
Well, it's so the way it seems to me is there's definitely a connection to Roosevelt, but I'm not sure what that connection is, because as we learn at the end of the issue, they have that like Van Roosevelt thing up on the wall, the graffiti,
right?
And so there must be something that happened in Roosevelt's family past that somehow ties into this whole thing now that Roosevelt's president. And as a result of that, I wonder if we're not going to see a connection to the end of Ride or Die. Oh, not Ride or Die.
Riders on the Storm.
Riders of the Storm. Because we had that whole thing with Edison and the Captains of Industry at the end of yep. Riders in the Storm, right as Roosevelt was about to become president. And I wonder if there's not some kind of plot in the background to get rid of Roosevelt from the White House.
See,
and they're just kind of using this whole family thing to accomplish that.
I agree that that could be a possibility, but it seems like they've had so many chances to eliminate Roosevelt before he even got to the White House. But, I mean, I definitely agree that, especially when he started saying, oh, you know, my grandmother used to tell us stories about mm-hmm. these guys, like your grandparents told you ghost stories. And, I mean, my grandparents mm-hmm. didn't tell me ghost stories, so I guess I had a terrible childhood. But... when he started getting into that, I started, you know, it started clicking. It's like, all right, so it's going to be, you know, someone from his family, you know, in his ancestry did something to piss off this cult of whatever. Mm. And that's, you know, how they're going to go at him. Or why, I guess.
Well, do you think it's a coincidence that they're basically the Buck Riders and Roosevelt formed the Rough Riders?
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's exactly what it should be, I guess.
So, I mean, did you guys look up about these Boken Rider things?
No. I don't okay. do research for comics.
Well, shame on you. Travis, did you look it up?
I looked it up a little bit. Did you?
I did.
Yeah. Let's hear your synopsis.
Well, I mean, there's a couple different things about the Buck Riders. So in Dutch mythology, there are these like demons that fly across the sky in flying goats, because why not? But there was some other stuff. The Buck Riders were kind of like Robin Hood in like English mythology, I guess you could say, where they would rob from the rich and give to the poor. So because of that, I have a leaning that maybe these aren't necessarily bad people. Because I think with the first Rough Riders series, Roosevelt seemed like the good guy, right? Like he formed his team to stop evil in the world. But at least to me, after the last series, the way that Roosevelt and the team left off with each other, and you still see that tension in this particular volume of the book, where Roosevelt maybe doesn't seem to have the purest of intents to me. Like he's doing good for the world, but you know, what are the consequences to other people? Is he really just kind of using that to, I guess, raise his own level in society to some extent? And I wonder if this group of book writers aren't kind of like the revolution, the rebellion against whatever Roosevelt stands for. But again, I don't know, because you know I still see that connection with the Edison stuff from the previous volume.
Do you think that might have something to do with like why Roosevelt was the last to come aboard? You know, like I wonder about that, and also kind of like what is driving Houdini. You know, like whether he's on the level or whether he's got an agenda.
Well, I mean, everyone's got an agenda. As we learned in Animosity, everyone's got an agenda. I just don't think we know exactly what Houdini's agenda is. And I'm not, like, terribly familiar with the timeline, but is Houdini, like, a big thing at the time that this would be happening in real life?
Well, this takes place a few years after the last volume, right?
Is it that long? Okay.
I don't remember. I thought it was for some reason. I thought that they made a reference to 3 years later.
Okay.
In the first issue.
Yeah, that's possible.
So I mean, he's got to be getting close to being somebody, right?
Sure.
Although he does still make mention of how you know he can wander anywhere and no one knows who he is, so maybe not.
Yeah, and I think he talks. I don't know. I can't remember if it was this issue or the previous one, where he's talking about still developing his act.
Yeah,
I think it might have been issue one. So this must be before he's famous.
Right.
Like Jack Johnson, I think was already kind of a famous boxer by this point anyway. Annie Oakley was already a known name. Edison was a known name. Monk, I guess, in between these two volumes, has become a known name. Because he was more just like a street gangster in the last time we saw him in Volume 2.
Right.
Where I think by now he actually has an organization he's running. So yeah, I don't know. Like there's always been some kind of tension between Houdini and Roosevelt. And I hope that gets explored more in this volume.
See,
Houdini is my favorite character in this book.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he and Annie Oakley are my two favorites.
Yeah, Annie's awesome.
Yeah.
We haven't seen her, like, superpowers yet, though.
No. Well, I mean, unless you count the fact that she can fire, like, a bajillion bullets at, out of six shooters.
Yeah, that's
no, crazy. She just reloads real fast, dude. Like Bionic Woman style.
Yeah, she can teleport the bullets into her gun.
Her relationship with Edison is one of my favorite things.
Oh yeah,
that I love how they just absolutely hate each other, and they're always paired off, so they always have to deal with each other.
Yep. Yeah, but see, that works though, right? Because you have the same thing with Jack and Houdini, but they mostly like each other.
Right.
But they provide a lot of comedic relief. And I don't know if, like, it's intended for Annie and Edison to, like, come off comedic as well. But in many respects, I think it comes out that way. Because their relationship is just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
So what about the what's his name? Edward Almost? No, that's the Battlestar Galactica guy. What's the kid from The Sixth Sense? What about that thing? The Sixth Sense is in this book.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I was surprised by that. I didn't think they were going that way with it.
Do you think that's actually true, though? Because, I mean, Lovecraft was kind of a douche. Do you think he actually sees dead people, or is that just like a thing that's drawn in for effect in the comic? Like, he doesn't actually see dead people.
I mean, I think maybe he...
I'll take it on face value.
Yeah?
You never know. He was kind of out there.
He was very out there.
So.
But he was a con artist, dude. He was like the Miss Cleo of the 20s. You remember? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Travis, you remember Miss Cleo?
Oh, yeah, darling.
Yeah, call me now. So I'm not sure about him, but I love that he's in here. Yeah. And I think it'd be awesome if he actually does see dead people. Because this volume's been a little different than the other ones, right? It seems a lot more mystical than the first two. Right. And in the first two, we have like weird stuff that could be... It was like an X-Files episode, right? Like you got this like story going on where you think it could be supernatural, but in the end, it's all very much explained through science. But
well,
like
you know...
The,
There's a line in the issue that actually references, like, are the Boken Riders real? And they're like, well, it depends on your perception or something, you know? Mm-hmm. So that might suggest that there's something about it that is subjective, or there's, like, another shoe to drop in some sense. Like, it's not magic, but science or something.
Mm, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, we might be going that direction. But I like that there's ghosts and demons and zombies in here, because I love that garbage. It's my favorite type of garbage. And I mean garbage in the best way. I know Adam listens to the podcast sometimes. I don't mean that pejoratively in any way, shape, or form. I really do love this kind of stuff. And he does it so well here. You know. And of course, he writes for TV, so he knows how to give that cinematic feel. Yep. And I think, you know... A lot of the Aftershock books feel very much like comics, whereas Rough Riders definitely feels much more like a TV show.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, each one of the minis could kind of be like a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
So get on making this a TV show. I want to watch.
Yeah. Don't go work for DC. Make a TV show of Rough Riders.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, work for DC so I can read some better books and talk about them on my podcast. But
oh man, yeah, this is good. Good issue. What is this? It's four issues again, right? Or is it five? Five issues.
Is it five? Wasn't the last one six?
Oh man, you're right. I cut off.
Wasn't the first volume? Was it seven? It was like an odd number, right?
No, it was six, but then you had that Rough Riders Nation.
Is that okay? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because the last one was six.
Yep.
So, I mean, six seems to be the going thing for the Aftershock trades.
Well, not just for Aftershock. I think six is a good number for any publisher to do a mini or an arc on.
Yeah.
Because it gives you a lot more room to breathe than the typical four issue arcs.
Yeah. Yeah. I just like that this book is really good.
Oh, that's always a plus.
Yeah. I mean, each time they announce that there's going to be more coming, uh-huh. I'm always happy.
Yeah. So I had a question. On the cover, you got these tarot cards. What does Annie's card say? Because it's blocked by the Ride or Die logo.
Death?
Oh, okay. Now that makes sense. Thank you, Aaron.
Right? Because you got...
Yeah.
Yeah, Justice, the Devil. You know, Houdini's the musician. She's the magician. You got Strength, and I'm pretty sure she's Death.
Yeah, that makes sense, because it's definitely a D and maybe an E, so that makes sense.
Yeah, it looks like an A kind of between the R and the I.
Yep. Cool. More tarot.
Dude, I mean, you read, have you read Secret Weapons, Owen?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Of course.
That was pretty crazy shit.
Yeah, it was awesome. I love Chris's breakdown on that, by the way.
It's epic, dude.
Yeah. That's a man that does his research. Well played, Chris. He doesn't listen to this. Yeah. He doesn't read Aftershock Comics.
Yeah.
He doesn't read anything but Valiant. That's a direct quote.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I know. Trust me.
So pretty soon, what's he going to do? Read nothing?
Oh, shit.
He's going to read Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe.
Yeah, I'm telling you. We'll get him hooked on Aftershock.
Yeah. We're going to get everyone hooked on Aftershock.
I try. I got my Valiant to start reading some.
Did you? Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, I know we've had, at least I've had a lot of interactions with people on Twitter where they've picked up some of these books based on my constantly talking about them everywhere.
The great thing about Aftershock is, I mean, now it seems like they have a lot of like weird horror stuff happening, mm-hmm. but there are so many different books that, you know, like Super Zero is totally different from everything. And if you have someone that's like, oh, I don't know if I really want to read a comic, I'm like, listen, it's about a girl who wants superpowers and she will literally try and recreate every superhero's origin to get these superpowers.
Yeah.
And it's just awesome. Ridiculous. Yep. And I've gotten people into Aftershock from that. I, you know, people are into darker stuff. I'm like, here's Black Eyed Kids. Just start this and you will thank me later. And they're like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, this book is great. And you know, like there's so many different things that any reader, you could be like, try this one and then go from there. Like I have a friend that liked war books that picked up Dreaming Eagles.
Nice.
You know, it's all great.
Yeah. I don't even like war books and I like Dreaming Eagles.
Dude, that book's so good. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I got it because it was like an Aftershock book.
Yep.
And then I waited until the whole thing was out before I even started reading it. And one day I just sat down and I read, you know, right through that thing in like an hour. And I was like, man, this book is amazing.
Is it time for our ratings?
Just one question before we tame-o up.
Sure.
Do you guys think that we will see Cthulhu before the end of the series?
That would be awesome.
I didn't until right now.
it's Lovecraft, dude. That's like the greatest hit, you know?
Yeah, but this is like baby Lovecraft.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm pretty sure we're still in like the teens, right? Like and Lovecraft didn't do Call of Cthulhu till the late 20s. So I think it's still a little early. But I hope there is an Easter egg on here that somehow gives him the idea of working on Call of Cthulhu.
Well, yeah, Aaron, you think as well, not likely?
I don't think it's going to happen, but I think if it does, it would be great. But, I mean, I could see, like Martin said, I could see something happening that maybe sparks the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily brings it out.
Yep.
Cool. I mean, I'm gonna guess that they do something along those lines, just because if you're gonna bring in Lovecraft, like, why not? Just because maybe it's too on the nose, but I'll be contrary and say yes, we'll see it.
Here's what's gonna happen. So this is all gonna be explained away by science. So these zombies are gonna be explained off with some like magical mushrooms that Lovecraft takes, and some shenanigans happen. Roosevelt goes to save him, and Lovecraft is tripping on shrooms, and when he looks up at Roosevelt, he's going to be a giant Cthulhu monster.
Yes, that's pretty good.
All right, Travis, why don't you kick off the Tamos?
I'm going to go 5 out of 5. Edison pissed his pants, Tamos.
Aaron?
I will give it 4.75 Jeffrey Combs Tamos.
Nice. I'm going to go with the obvious one. I will give this a 5 out of 5 I See Dead People Tamos.
How's that the obvious one?
Because it's the Sixth Sense, bro.
I don't know.
He says it at the end. Doesn't he say, I see dead people?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
That's the last page.
No, that's right. Good, man. I think he won the Tamos on that one.
Yeah, why not? There's okay, no winning on this podcast.
We all win.
Oh. All right, sure. Go on. Go on. It's your show. Continue.
Yes, and you all win too, listeners. Thanks for joining us. I think that's going to wrap it up. You want to find us on Twitter? I am at The Great Magnet. Martin is at GeekFine. And Aaron, help me out.
I am at Aaron Esbell.
How in all right.
Yeah.
And it's a good one.
Well, you don't know the S is a fake one.
No, I thought you were Asbell. No. Doesn't make sense. Okay, and what's the podcast Twitter handle?
At Aftershock Pop.
All right, so come find us there. That'll do it. Thanks for joining us. Shock the world, everybody.